Toksik Newsom, Salama, thank you, and welcome to Juno Afternoon from community-supported KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You may also join us via our live stream on KTOO's YouTube and Facebook pages. Conversations for today, Thursday, January 22nd, 2026. Are you needing some laughs? Well, Tennessee comedian Billy Wayne Davis is coming back to Juno at the Gold Town on January 31st. He's been on Last Comic Standing. He has his own comedy special called Testify and many other appearances on the comedy circuit. He joins us to chat and preview the upcoming show. The Juno Symphony continues its season this weekend with Resurgence and Rediscovery. We talk with new music director Brad Hograth and the guest pianist Alexander Tutinoff and learn what's on the program. And we learn about the UAS Outdoor Studies program, which just completed a major expedition class in Japan this January. What is this program and how can you get involved? Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress, seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kehinak John Martin. And the word this week is Yanshuka.
Yanshuka.
That means camp. And here is a sentence.
Asteh.
People fish when they travel by boat to camp. Let's hear it again.
Yanshuka.
Camp. Gunas Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska at Southeast for this audio.
Kehinuk John Martin was Dakdain Tan and a child of a Kagwantan man. He is from the Hunakawu, the people of Huna, and was a contributing elder and speaker at many language immersion gatherings in Glacier Bay, Yakutat, and Juneau. He attended boarding school in Shkakwe, Skagway, and attended Gonzaga University.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I am your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube and Facebook pages. Comedian Billy Wayne Davis has been to Juno before. He liked it so much, he's coming back. He'll be at the Gold Town on Saturday, January 31st, for one night only. This king of Tennessee tall tales and no-holds-barred stand-up, Billy Wayne Davis, has been on stages nationwide, has his own TV special called Testify. He's got spots on Last Comic Standing. He's been on Conan. He's been all around, and he just landed in Alaska. So Billy Wayne is joining us from a car somewhere in Alaska. Billy, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. It's so great to have you on the show. Welcome, welcome. So you literally just landed in Alaska. Which city did you land in?
I just landed in Anchorage. I landed about 2:15 this afternoon.
Okay, that's great. And where were you coming from?
Los Angeles. I live in Los Angeles.
You live right in L.A. now. Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Well, thanks for joining us ahead of time. You're coming in to Juno next weekend, but you're here already in Alaska. Are you touring around the state here and there?
Yes. It is one of my favorite tours of the year. Is I come up in January. This is the third time I think I've done it in January, and it's when you guys need it the most, is what I've gathered. So,
yeah, because we just had a snowpocalypse, which I'm sure you've heard about, and Anchorage also got dumped on. It looks like even in your car here, for those who are on the stream, you can see the snow outside Billy Wayne's car there.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's different than LA immediately. I am going to say I'm in the market for a used boat. So when I get to Juneau, I already got some deals on some boats.
There might be some boats that need some repair that you could
maybe get for cheap.
Maybe
I can help with that.
Yeah, yes, you might get some for cheap.
Some fixer-uppers.
So, Billy, do you go by Billy or Billy Wayne?
I sure do. Both of them.
Both of them. Okay.
I'll answer about anything if you got dinner.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. I mean, because you are from Tennessee. You're from, is it a little town that you're from, Crossville?
Yes, and they will argue that it's not little anymore, but I like to point out that it's still pretty small.
Yeah.
Still.
And you're, well, we know a little bit about small here in Juneau, for sure.
Yes.
And your comedy, a lot of it I can't play on the radio. So I was looking through some Instagram clips, and I was like, oh, there's one. Oh, no, never mind. there was one that I saw, which was pretty funny. But where does a lot of your comedy come from? Does it come from your upbringing in Tennessee? Is it about sort of like the difference between being like a country boy and now you live in L.A. and, you know, is there some of that comedy in there?
I think there is a little bit of fish out of water in what I'm doing, but I think a lot, as my career progresses, I think the best way to what I do now is since I've traveled so much, I've been doing this about 20 years, and I like to go to obscure, unique places to meet obscure, unique people, as you can tell that I come up to Alaska in January. But what I like to describe my comedy as is like I'm an irreverent storyteller that's trying to make people realize that we have way more in common than we have in different.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And so give us just a sense of like what are some of the topics that you cover for those who might be wanting to get out next Saturday. This is not this Saturday. This is next Saturday, January 31st.
You got time.
What can people expect? What kind of topics will you be talking about?
Well, the first 20 minutes or so, I'm gonna make fun of every part of Alaska life that I've and it's not gonna be the easy low hanging fruit takes that a lot of comedians who first come up to Alaska have. I've been up here about 15 times, so I know the difference between Juneau and Fairbanks and Talkeetna and Wasilla. I know the difference, and
yeah.
I can make fun of all the differences, and I'm going to make fun of all the differences.
Well, it's good. We need to laugh at ourselves. So you make fun of kind of like the way that people are in their communities here in whatever, wherever you go, but specifically for us, I guess, Alaska. Yeah.
Yes, and because Alaska has a great sense of humor about itself. All the people do. It's one of the first things I noticed one of the first times I came up here. And like one of the first, and it's got a dark sense of humor because everything can kill you up here, including the air at any time.
Pretty much.
So you got to keep your head on a swivel, and you guys let people know that you have a messed up sense of humor as soon as you land at Ted Stevens International Airport and you look up. What happened to Ted Stevens?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's pretty funny that
yeah.
you guys named an airport after a man that passed away in an airplane accident.
Yeah, so, that is pretty tragic. I think the airport was named before that happened, but yeah, it is. There's
that. Ruins the joke, Boston.
Yeah, I know, but those who live here would know that, I guess, right? So that's kind of fun because I do think it's nice to sort of, we have to laugh at ourselves, right? I mean, we got to sort of make a little bit fun of who we are and the circumstances that we live in. Do you get into, like, are people expecting, you know, is there politics in your show at all? Or do you kind of avoid all that?
The politics I talk about where probably right now it's pretty clear where I stand. But most of the time, I'm going to point out how both sides are for the rich people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of,
yeah.
In the last 5 to 10 years, I've kind of switched from a left and right to a top and bottom kind of
Right. So you're sort of coming at your comedy comes from like the everyman point of view, right? Sort of the.
Until I have $1 billion. Right. Yeah, that's probably where I'm going to come from.
Until you can't relate, right? Until you have a driver. You're driving yourself, right? So,
until I have a driver that I'm actually paying and not through an app.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So what is it like to be, you know, at this stage in your career? You've had your own special. It's called Testify. People can look it up. It was on, I think, Hulu. It's on YouTube, available to watch. You get a sense of Billy's comedy. It's like 45 minutes, the standard, you know, comedy special. You've been on Conan. You've been on Last Comic Standing. So you're building this career. Where do you think you are right now in sense of that? And what's that circuit like for you?
I think career-wise, I'm happy with where I'm at career. I mean, for sure, you're always building.
Yeah.
But I think the way I set out to do stand-up was to get really good at it and go see as many different places as I could while making a living.
Right.
And I have more than done that. And at this point, 20 years in, I think I know how to do it really, really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can go say some of the things that I've always wanted to say. So I'm pretty excited about what the future holds.
That's cool. And I know a lot of comics and stand-ups and stuff, they sort of, you know, they maybe want to do a TV show or anything. Is that something that you like? Or do you like the sort of the traveling, touring kind of thing more?
I mean, don't get me wrong. If they gave me a TV show where I didn't have to run around the country and the world, and they pay me a bunch of money, I would take that in a second. But I do enjoy the traveling. I have I have two boys that I don't like being away from. So
yeah.
I've changed how much I travel so I can be with them more. But ideally, what I would love to do is something like Anthony Bourdain did, whereas I kind of go meet. And because I love culture, I love different cultures. I love human beings. I love cities and towns and places and communities. I genuinely love that, not even for television, it's just career wise I find it fascinating, and I think that shows when I've done some travel programs.
So you could do like a combination of comedy and, you know, culture exploration inside a TV show, right? But actually be really kind of cool to be able to sort of see that side of things. You know, but I understand too, like if they come and say, hey, you know, we want to give you $20 million to stay in LA and do a TV show, you're going to be like, no, please don't give me that money. I don't want that money.
You just see a fist come in. That's my wife's fist.
Your wife be like, no, you take that money, please.
You're staying home.
Yeah, stay home, because then everybody gets to, you know, enjoy your company, and then the other people would see you on the TV. But I do like the idea. That's a really cool idea to sort of think about, you know, combining the comedy with sort of a cultural exploration show, like to sort of get that going. I think that would be pretty cool. Is that something you're working on, or are you thinking about working on?
I mean, we're shooting some of the tour this weekend and next week. Our friend Eric came with Justin Sands, the other, my opening comedian. They're in the car with us.
Oh, nice. Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Right on. For those on the stream, you could see that. For those on the radio, you could hear it. It's nice to have them there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not going this by myself. I'm not that dumb. I'm pretty dumb, but not that dumb. So.
Well, you sound dumber than you look. That's probably.
No, I can't. Good Lord. I can't argue that at all.
That's the old joke. That was low hanging fruit, like you say. That was easy. That was an easy one.
I mean, to write back at you, you got a face for radio.
That's exactly right. Billy Wayne Davis is coming to Juno. You can check out his stuff on YouTube. He's also got Instagram. Where can we find you, Billy, in terms of getting prepped for the show next week? You got an Instagram, I think. Billy, is it just Billy Wayne Davis?
Yeah. If you Google or whatever your browser of choice is, Billy Wayne Davis, there might be an old Georgia murderer come up, but everything else is me.
Is you. And okay.
It's got all the platforms you choose, and you can get tickets to the Juno show at Eventbrite. We're almost sold out. The first one will probably add a late show. So
you might end up doing two shows on that Saturday.
If tickets sell out, I mean, we've sold a good amount already. So if we sell out that first one pretty fast, I think we'll probably add another one. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Because I think that's about what you did last time. I think you ended up doing two shows last time here, too.
Yeah. And I love Juno and I love the Gold Town.
Gold Town's the best. Yeah. Nice intimate space.
Best.
Yeah. It's really good. So check out, put in your favorite search engine, Billy Wayne Davis. You can also search him on YouTube. You can see some of his specials and shorts and stuff over there. Great, funny comedian coming to town January 31st at the Gold Town. As Billy mentioned, tickets are available on Eventbrite. Get them now because they do run out. Gold Town's not the biggest theater in the world, so get your tickets now. Billy and the crew and the car, welcome back to Alaska. Pleasure to have y'all here. Really appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, yeah. And I hope I see you next week.
Hopefully, yeah. I'd love to get out and see the show. I think that would be fantastic.
Awesome. Y'all have a good week. I'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Billy. That was Billy Wayne Davis here on Juno Afternoon. We are going to now take a little break. We're going to listen to this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of young Indigenous men spent a week on the Wind River Reservation for a photo camp with National Geographic. In this encore episode, Our Living Lands producer Daniel Spalding spoke to Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman about the Student Photographers Showcase.
Can you tell us a little bit about the photo camp and what the students did there?
Totally. So this is the third year that Nat Geo's hosted this kind of camp in Wyoming. The big picture idea is pretty simple. It's all about mentorship. Professional photographers partner with young people in different places around the world, and they spend a week learning together and taking photos. The crew this year was made up of folks from the Wind River Reservation and the surrounding area, and from the Menominee Reservation in Wisconsin. They spent the week at Crow Creek, which is in the northwest part of the Wind River Reservation. That was their base camp. They hung out with an orphan baby bison named Ruby, visited bison jumps, and just got to explore, hang out, and take a lot of cool photos. And it was an all-guys group. National Geographic explorer Ronan Donovan helped organize the camp with Indigenous community members and explained the why behind that choice.
Young men are struggling in disproportionate ways to young women, and the ripple effects throughout communities and societies, I feel like, is profound.
You recently attended a showcase for the photo camp. Can you describe some of the photos you saw and what that event was like?
The showcase was really special. It was on a Friday night at Central Wyoming College at the Intertribal Education and Community Center on campus. A bunch of folks showed up. There were families and kids and elders too. Everyone piled into this classroom and watched a slideshow on a big screen projector. Honestly, the photos were super stunning. There were a few that really stood out to me. A silhouetted hand reaching into the sky, Ruby the bison resting its head on someone's chest, a grandmother and her granddaughter with their faces lit up by the sun. And after the slideshow, the group sang this prayer song for everyone.
You spoke with some of the photographers. What did they have to say about the experience?
They had some great reflections. I chatted with one in the hallway right after the slideshow.
My name's Corey Budley, and I'm a student photographer for National Geographic. Could I say that?
Butler's about to be a senior at St. Stephen's High School on the Wind River Reservation. He said meeting new people and having new experiences were highlights, but one thing definitely stood out.
I've never seen a buffalo get harvested before, so that was pretty crazy to see, you know.
He came to the photo camp last year too, but he still had some new takeaways.
Learning about portraits, how to take portraits, and messing around with light. I think most of my favorite pictures were like landscape. I took a photograph, it was of like some wheat. It was kind of dark, a little moody. It was like a cloudy sky, and I really liked it.
I also talked with Jackson Taylor. He's 18 and just graduated from Moscow High School in Idaho. Taylor said the bison harvest was a huge highlight.
After the buffalo was killed, seeing the herd gather around it and doing their dance for it and respecting it, it felt like as many emotions as we had that day, all those buffaloes had the same, if not more intense emotions and feelings.
He also had some more technical takeaways.
I learned that I tend to crop the bottom and the top out of every image without fail. So I think when it comes to lessons, that's the biggest is zoom out more.
So one more question for you. You report on a lot of different indigenous stories in the region. What was unique about this story that made you want to cover it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think photography and storytelling are super powerful tools. And who's behind the camera or the microphone or the pen, I think it makes a big difference. But Jackson Taylor, who we heard from earlier, summed it up way better than I can. He said the group talked a lot about this idea of photography as a weapon.
It's not a weapon that kills. It's a weapon that reveals truth, knowledge, and information. And it's one that gives instead of takes. And I don't think there's another weapon like that on the planet. So I want to use that weapon in my life to give as much as I can and wield the camera responsibly, as we all should.
Taylor told me he wants to make a career out of photojournalism or documentary filmmaking. And really, this whole event gets me psyched for the next generation of storytellers.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kuwanic Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This weekend, the Juno Symphony continues its 25-26 season with resurgence and rediscovery with guest pianist Alexander Tutinov. New music director Brad Hogarth conducts. Both join me now in the studio, along with executive director for the symphony, Charlotte Truitt. Gunath Chi, Shayadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all in the studio. Welcome in. Wasiati, Brad, how are you?
Doing well. Thank you so much for having us.
Excellent. Charlotte, Wasiati, how are you?
Fantastic.
And Alexander, welcome in.
Thank you for letting me have this opportunity.
Of course. So tell me, I'm playing this underneath us a little bit here. What are we listening to right now?
This is the lesser version of the Grieg Piano Concerto, which is on the program, and we're going to do it justice.
We won't say who's doing this version, but you are doing your own version. This is just a recorded version. But this is, so Grieg's Piano Concerto. Tell me a little bit about Grieg and where this Piano Concerto comes from.
It's Norway, okay. The land of fjords and rough, rugged terrain and people with beautiful hearts and I see a lot of parallels, actually.
So makes
this
sense.
Music, Edvard Grieg, Norwegian composer, and he's written several instantly recognizable tunes like the Hollow Mountain King and the Morning that people know. I'm not going to sing it. Not a chance. It's better for your audiences. But this concerto is right up there with like the most beloved classical masterpieces ever written, and the chance to play it with the beloved orchestra, you know, it's hard to beat.
And when did you've played this before, I'm imagining. How many times do you feel like you've played this concerto?
I will tell you, oddly enough, everybody thinks I played it too many times, and I'm rarely asked. But there is, if there is ever a Tutnov trivia exam or a game, for the first time, I played it at the age of 10.
Oh, my gosh.
With the National Philharmonic of Soviet Union back then. Now, whoa, you know I'm old. But since then, I've only done it once. And that's been a while. So three is a charm.
So this is going to be your third time.
Correct.
Wow, that's amazing. And I know we're referencing sort of a Tutnov trivia question. But Brad, can you tell us a little bit about Alexander Tutnov? And because he's pretty funny and humble, but like he's pretty renowned.
Absolutely, he's a fantastic pianist, world renowned, and also specifically quite well known in this community. Over the years, he's come to do master classes here, worked with a lot of young pianists in Juneau, played solo recitals even as recently as June, I think, this year. So he has been a mainstay and a favorite amongst the Juneau audiences for many, many, many years, and we're so excited to have him back.
Is there something, Alexander, about Alaska or Juneau specifically that draws you?
I got a Juno bug. What can I say? It's everything, but of course it's human connections. I had the privilege of returning as the visiting piano instructor for UAS for a number of years, I think 8 or 9, and early in this millennium. And later on, we just had continuing this so-called Tutnov immersion. When I come and everybody immerses in this thing, and there's a lot of talent and wonderful people, and you know, I mean, the rest is history. You have to work hard to not let me come here, you know.
Yeah, I think last time you were on, we talked a little bit about where it began for you, and you just referenced sort of being 10 playing this Grieg concerto for the first time. When did you start on the piano?
Before I knew any better. I think, well, the family story has it that I was 3 and my aunt was playing the piano in the family room in Belarus, which was part of the Soviet Union at the time. And then our grandma called us for a meal, but apparently I came and played what she was playing on the piano. And in our house, you know, grandma does not repeat things twice. So she came to check, and it was no longer her daughter, but me. And so they thought maybe I need piano lessons. Mm. So they brought me to our first teacher, who said, 3's early, come back next year.
3's early.
And at 4, she had me, you know, march to music and move a little bit and internalize the rhythm. But by 5, I've started preparing a program, and at 6, she said she was done with me. She said there's a school for specially gifted children in Moscow, and they auditioned about 200 people. They chose 3, and promptly, the year I entered, it was renamed to Central Music School rather than School for Especially Gifted Children. Mm. I think I had something to do with that. They went, you know, lowered their standards somehow. So, but
I doubt it. Where do you make your home now?
Ashland, Oregon.
Okay.
Not the worst place to be, but, you know.
Yeah, it's beautiful there. Ashland's gorgeous. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming back to Juneau. That's fantastic. This is Juneau Afternoon. We're talking about the Juneau Symphony Concert Resurgence and Rediscovery. Charlotte, before I talk to Brad a little bit, give me the details, when, where, how, and all that good stuff.
The concerts will be this weekend, Saturday night the 24th at 7:30, Juno Douglas High School Auditorium, and then Sunday at 3 p.m., again at Juno Douglas High School Auditorium. 1 hour before each performance will be a pre-concert talk, so you can hear a little bit more from Brad and Alexander, I think, will also be joining him. So people can come early, come an hour early to hear more about the music.
Okay, great. And you can find information and tickets at junosymphony.org.
That's right.
Yeah,
Juno,
so that's
our website.
That's the website where you can get some tickets. I'm glad that you're back at the high school, Yada'akatle Auditorium, mm-hmm. because you can fit more people in there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's nice that you can fit a lot more folks in there. Because I know, like you said, Alexander Tutinov's a very well-renowned, not worldwide, but definitely here in Juno. So, Brad, how did we come up with this program, Resurgence and Rediscovery?
Absolutely. So, this season is Bold Symphonic Horizons is the overarching theme. And so each concert has sort of a big orchestral masterwork at its core. And the themes of this season are really about like courage and hope and resilience and all of these things that I think are just very important in human life at all times. But, you know, especially with all the weather that's been happening recently, I know everybody's in need of just some rest and some joy and some uplifting. So this concert, Brahms' First Symphony, is a really special one. He wrote it very late in his career. He was a very successful composer, but he was sort of in the shadow of Beethoven. So he was very anxious about, you know, being, you know, compared to Beethoven and, you know, living up to that expectation. So he wrote the First Symphony finally after about 20 years of drafts, and we're so lucky he did because it's wonderful, and we quickly got three more symphonies after that. But this First Symphony really takes us from what everybody's experienced in the last couple of weeks. We start dark, stormy, really just guttural in doubt and in all of these just, you know, I know everybody's been there, and now, and then towards the end of the symphony, we have this opening, we have light, we have hope, we have beauty, we have uplifting, and he was actually paying homage to Beethoven. So if everybody knows Beethoven's Ninth, the Ode to Joy,
sure.
He sort of reflects that a little bit in his fourth movement. So you get this moment where, you know, the clouds part, the sunshine comes through.
And like yesterday.
Like yesterday. Yeah. Basically, we are telling the story of Juno in the last couple
of
weeks.
Of January and Juno, yeah.
Through this. So, you know, that's why, you know, rediscovery and resurgence also means, you know, resilience is part of this as well. So also rediscovery, we're playing a piece, the second overture by Louise Ferenc. And she was an incredible composer in the 19th century, but also a very well-renowned pianist. She was a piano soloist, and she was one of the only female professors at the Paris Conservatory during that time. She had, I think, almost a 40-year tenure there, which was unheard of. Mm. And she also, a very important figure, she was so beloved as a concert pianist that she went to the Paris Conservatory and said, you know, I need to be paid the same as my male colleagues, which was unheard of at the time. So she was a real trailblazer. And her overture that we're opening with is so fun. It's, you know, it's a little bit of everything. You know, if you love Mozart, if you love Mendelssohn, if you love all these composers, it's a little bit of that, but with her own little twist on it. Again, it starts with, you know, a bit of a rumble, and then quickly we get into this just playful, so much fun. It's just this dance and scherzo. It's just so much fun. So it's a wonderful way to open the program. Then we get to Alexander with the Grieg, and then finish with the Brahms. So
okay.
If these are familiar composers to you, please come out. There's nothing better than live music. But if this feels unfamiliar, I promise you, you will absolutely love it. Brahms' First Symphony has been an inspiration for a lot of composers. So if you like movie music and if you like, you know, that kind of music, a lot of composers have taken pretty direct inspiration from his sound and his orchestrations and his the way he treats an orchestra. So it'll feel very comfortable, you feel at home, and we'd love to have you come and just, you know, spend the day with us.
That's exciting. And Brad, this is your first season.
This is.
As the new music director, so we can still call you new, right?
Still new.
And this would be the second concert then that you've done. How have you found your time working with the Juno Symphony and the musicians here in town?
I love the musicians here. They're so dedicated to their craft and so energetic and sort of willing to go along the ride. I mean, we're playing some very difficult repertoire this season, and they have just been nothing but, you know, resilient and, you know, and just absolutely so well prepared, so lovely to work with. We're doing some youth concerts this Friday. I guess that's tomorrow morning. Okay. For the fourth and fifth graders. So I'm so excited to get to work with that aspect of the community as well. But the Juno musicians are just fantastic and lovely to work with. And everybody knows that, Charlotte, you've got the best executive director on the planet. She is just making, you know, absolutely everything happen in this community, and it's an inspiration.
Well, good news for you all being here. Charlotte, what's next for the symphony after this weekend's concert? There's one more concert in the season, right?
Well, we have two more concerts.
Two more. Okay.
We have a concert in April, the 18th and 19th, I believe. Got the right date. And then our Pops concert will wrap up the season June 6th and 7th. And
okay.
A lot, that one has a lot of movie music, Star Wars and lots of
exciting things. So can you still get
more concerts?
Can you still get season tickets if you wanted to?
If you wanted to purchase the season tickets, certainly. And
yeah.
If you want to do a package of two, give us a call and we'll work with you on that as well.
Work it out. You can go to JunoSymphony.org to find out all the information. But get yourself out this weekend, January 24th and 25th, Resurgence and Rediscovery, Saturday night at 7:30 and Sunday at 3, all at JDHS Yedaya Kathleh Auditorium, with a pre-concert talk with both the new music director, Brad Hogarth, and world-renowned pianist Alexander Tutinov. He might even tell a joke or two. I'm imagining that there will be some humor in those pre-concert talks.
I think there will be laughter and singing.
I love that. Well, thank you all for coming in. Gunnath Cheese for being here.
Thank you.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Sounds wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. On a warm spring day, snow is melting fast in a soggy woodland meadow. Several places in this green meadow are marked by overturned soil, pushed out of small burrows tucked into the meadow grass and vegetation. A closer look reveals a network of matted, crisscrossing trails, 2 or 3 inches wide, a curvy maze of matted dead grass and dirt. These mark trails that voles made during the winter, when they were traveling and working under the snow. Voles are rodents, similar to mice, and they don't hibernate. During the winter, they are active in the space between the bottom of the fallen snow and the top of the frozen ground, the subnivian zone. It's ideal for voles, lemmings, shrews, mice, and other small animals that don't hibernate. The snow provides insulation from the winter cold above and hides them from predators. Amid the trails of dirt, I see a wad of vegetation the size of a football, woven from dry grass and stems. I tease it apart. It's hollow inside. It's a nest the voles made during the winter. These trails are likely the work of meadow voles, which live communally. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube and Facebook pages. The Outdoor Studies program at the University of Alaska Southeast is an intensive humanities program that offers students the opportunity to develop skills and characteristics that are essential to success as a leader in outdoor and adventure settings, and to better understand the human relationship to the natural world. That comes from the description from the department exactly about what this program is. And students in the program just completed a major expedition course in Japan. And we're going to talk a little bit about this program and this trip to Japan. It's interesting because I saw a YouTube video sort of on the website, which is from like 7 years ago. So this is something that's been going on for a while, this course. But let me tell you who I have with me in the studio. I have two students, Brian Bolaños and also Kiana Potter. Gunnath Cheesh, welcome in. Gunnath Cheesh, Wasiyati, how are you, Brian?
Gunnath Cheesh, I'm doing good.
Excellent. And Kiana, how are you?
Gunnath Cheesh, yeah, I'm great.
Wasiyati, thank you so much for coming in. And then I have two Kevins. They're faculty, and they go by Kevins. One is Kevin Krein, and the other is Kevin Meyer, or Kevin K and Kevin M, however that. Is that how the students distinguish you guys?
It's just confusing. We both look whenever anybody says Kevin. And
Kevin, you just instantly look, And because, but you each do something a little bit differently, right? In terms of your departments. What one of you teaches English?
I teach English.
You teach English.
Kevin Meyer teaches English.
Kevin Meyer teaches English. And what is Kevin Krein?
And then Kevin Krein. I teach philosophy and outdoor studies.
Okay, so this so tell me how this outdoor studies program came to be. Let's start with that.
Sure. So I came to UAS in 1998, and at the time there was no outdoor studies program at all.
Seems and weird for a town like Juneau.
It seemed really weird to me, and I immediately told the dean of arts and sciences that there should be an outdoor studies program, and it just happened to be that at the same time. Some local people came and wanted to teach outdoor studies classes. One of them was a professional climbing guide who'd climbed kind of all over the world, and another was a kayaking guide, and they wanted somebody to coordinate outdoor courses. And so I was kind of a fairly obvious person to do it, and so I stepped in and started coordinating those courses and then also offering other courses in backpacking and backcountry skiing. And the program was really popular, and so I was asked to design a one-year leadership program.
Okay.
And so I put that together, and I really did. It's our program's different than most outdoor programs in the world in that a lot of programs in outdoor rec are really focused on just giving some basic skills to manage people or to kind of management skills combined with outdoor skills. But I was more interested in designing a program that actually studied outdoor activities. Mm. And so my own work and publications is in philosophy of sport, and I write about nature sports and how people relate to the natural world and how those sports function, what their role, their cultural role is, and things like that. And so I built that program so that it combined academic courses along with outdoor skills courses. And that program as well was successful. And so we were asked a little bit later to develop a four-year program. So there's now a Bachelor of Liberal Arts in Outdoor and Adventure Studies. And there's also a Bachelor of Arts in Environmental Studies with an emphasis in Outdoor Studies. And all of the programs really work in that way, that students take outdoor courses that are just straight up skills courses, but then they also take courses in Kevin Meyer teaches literature and the environment, and I teach a philosophy class called Perspectives of the Natural World. And then we also have courses that combine outdoor field time with academic study. So actually, the two students here will both be a part of, there's a course called Mountain Studies right now, where we meet every Friday and are outside for the first part of the day, and then come back in the classroom at around 2 o'clock, and then have a 3-hour academic class after that.
Oh, wow.
So in the class, we're doing something outside and then looking at history and literature and philosophy related to mountain, primarily climbing and skiing, but also the different ways that the people have related to mountains. And
that's amazing. Like, what a history. Because as you were talking, I was thinking about 1998, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's like 20 years ago. No, that's almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I guess it's like 28 years ago now, if we're in 2026, which is just, I was just like, time is so weird, right? It's just weird. The last 10 years don't seem to exist. But it's also interesting because at first it seems like you might get somebody who goes, wait, I'm going to get 3 credits for like going outside and hiking? That sounds pretty cool. But then there's so much more to it, which is you were just explaining, just in terms of like how things work, why things are the way they are, cultural aspects of outdoor activities. Like there's something really, really cool about that. And Kevin M., you teach English. So how did you get involved in the outdoor studies program?
Yeah, good question. I've sort of been on the periphery for a long time, and my 300-level literature and environment class has always been a requirement in the 1-year and the 4-year degrees. But in my personal life, I work as a fishing guide in the summer. I'm an avid backcountry skier. I love to be outside. I'm a big hunter. And so, like Kevin, my scholarly work has historically focused on the environmental implications of outdoor recreation. So I wrote a dissertation about hunting and fishing stories and thinking about equity, thinking about climate change, thinking about broader political movements that come out of these recreational pursuits. So that my literature and environment class seemed like a natural fit, and I've always taught that one. But over the years, I've begun teaching some of the skills classes. So I teach a fly fishing class, a backcountry skiing class, and one like mountain studies. It's called Salmon Sport and Society, where we're thinking all semester about the human relationship to fish, but we're learning to fly fish a little bit, and it concludes with a service learning project in Yakutat.
Awesome.
Yeah.
There are some, as Kevin Krine mentioned, there are degrees in this. So there's a BA in environmental studies with an emphasis in environmental studies, cultural geography, or outdoor studies. There's a BLA program, right? Uh-huh. Outdoor and adventure studies. You can also minor in it or get a certificate, right?
Yes,
so you don't have
exactly
to get a full degree if you don't want to. So that's all available. And for reference, if you're interested in this, you can go to uas.alaska.edu and just search outdoor studies. And I'm sure the page will come up because any government or university pages are always like 5 million links long.
Also, I'll just mention in terms of like, I guess, sales pitch.
Yeah.
This spring, we also have courses that still have a few spots in them. So there's a winter backpacking class.
Oh, okay.
Where students go out and build snow caves and sleep in snow caves.
What?
There's an avalanche.
Are you, either of you doing that?
I'm not in that.
Okay. I'm just curious. Okay.
There is an avalanche course. So a level
Very
one
appropriate.
Avalanche course that I'd recommend for anybody in the community who is recreating outside. We do have our ice climbing course starts tomorrow. So if anybody, there are, I think, a couple spots. If anybody really wants to do that, they should register tonight.
Tonight, yeah.
Or get
yeah.
in touch with me. Anything that I'm missing?
And like at UAS, you don't have to be admitted to a program, right? You're able to take classes before you get the degree, right?
Definitely.
I mean, there might be some prerequisites for certain classes, but if there is an open class, a community member, like you said, the avalanche class, they could take that class.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's really cool. All right, let's talk to these students a little bit, Kiana Potter and Brian Bolaños. So did you both go to Japan?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, so what was that experience like? Kiana, let me start with you, because you brightened up when I said Japan. So tell me a little bit about that experience.
Oh, I mean, it was amazing. The skiing is the obvious talking point, because it's definitely the best skiing I've ever done.
Mm.
But, like, the cultural experience of it, too, was really interesting, just kind of interacting with a culture that just operates pretty differently than we do in the United States was very eye-opening. And also ate, like, the best sushi and ramen of my life.
Now, are you in one of the degree programs, or are you taking these courses just for fun?
I'm doing a little bit of a different thing. I'm doing an independent design major.
Okay.
But it's 50% outdoor studies and 50% indigenous studies.
Okay.
But it's still like the Bachelor of Liberal Arts.
Right, the BLA that you can kind of design your own kind of deal, right?
Yeah.
And so what are you hoping to do with your degrees?
Oh, that's the big question,
isn't
right?
it, though? What year are you?
I am hopefully graduating in May.
Oh, you're hopefully graduating. Okay, yeah. So then you're really starting to think about, what do I do after I graduate?
Yeah.
So where do these, I guess I can also ask these guys, but I want to talk to you about it. Where do you think it will lead you? What kind of job do you think you might get with these degrees?
Yeah. Well, through the Outdoor Studies program, I was able to get a really amazing internship with Alaska Mountaineering School up in Talkeetna this past summer, and was doing some guiding up in the Alaska Range. And, big mountain guiding is a super interesting topic to talk about, especially, like, through the lens of Indigenous studies. Mm. And I think right now, for where I'm at in my life, I want to be bringing the, like, lens of indigeneity to outdoor recreation and guiding, and kind of thinking about our relationships to land a little bit more critically than historically for people who are paying guides to take them into mountains.
Right. Okay, that's cool. And Brian, tell me a little bit about your experience going to Japan. What did you discover?
Yeah, it was really cool. Like,
get on that mic just a little bit more there for you. That's all right.
It was really cool seeing, like, getting firsthand experience, like, traveling to a different foreign country. I think that was, like, a big one for me, and, like, navigating, getting around, using their public transportation. And, like Kiana just said, the snowboarding and skiing was, like, the cream of the crop. But other than that, it was just cool to see, like, how a different culture, like, kind of operates in their city, and just kind of the different mannerisms and the different foods and whatnot.
Do you think that they have a different relationship to the land, like Kiana was talking about just now? Like, do they treat it differently than, say, we might?
Oh, I believe 100%, like, just, like, even being around, like, the city and, like, the public areas, everything was just, like, really clean and just, like, well-kept. And there was, like, there was a system to things, like, where people walked, and there's just, like, always a polite courtesy when it comes to, like, interacting with different people working or public service workers and stuff. There's always a politeness.
Oh, that's so fun to hear about. And for you, are you in one of the degree programs? What are you trying to do with?
Yeah, I'm currently working on my Associate of Arts, GERs, and I'm in the Outdoor Study Certificate Program.
Okay.
And I plan to turn that into a bachelor's, either the environmental studies or sciences. I'm still kind of undecided.
Figuring that out, yeah.
What I want to do, but definitely something in the outdoors and, yeah, spreading more awareness of this program.
Yeah. So, Kevin Krein, because I think Kiana described it pretty well there in terms of it, but because you added these leadership components to the program, is this something, what are the jobs that people can go into with this particular degree?
Oh, that's a great question. So one of the, I guess we'll come back to the degree design.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, a lot of people come into the program wanting to work as outdoor guides, and and it's been great. I mean, we really, Kevin and I both get a number of people who are always looking to hire our students. And so every, you know, I feel like I get more people are trying to hire guides than we have students to fill positions. But I also think that some people want to do that for their whole lives. Other people want to do that for, you know, 10 years or something like that. And then after that, they're in their mid-30s and maybe looking for a job that doesn't force them to travel and carry a heavy backpack all the time, things like that. And so we really have tried to design the program so that students, by the time they finish it, have a really solid educational background. And then if they want to, they can go on to graduate school or any type of professional work. And so so our students, I guess then to come back and answer the question more directly, our students do a wide range of things. We have some that have gone on to careers as international big mountain guides or ski guides or kayaking guides. We also have people who have ended up working at the Forest Service or Park Service and doing really well in those positions.
That's what I was thinking about. Like, even you mentioned the avalanche course, like people maybe working, you know, maybe they need to do some other sciencey stuff too, but becoming, you know, working in avalanche forecasting or something like that, if they get some of that other things in there, maybe. Do people become administrators? Like, I think of things like Trail Mix, where you're doing both. You're like running a program, getting out.
Funny you should mention that.
Megan Tabachuk, who's the current executive director at Trail Mix, is a former student.
Well, see,
our
that's
program,
perfect. So. Megan's been on the show before. Yeah, Trail Mix comes on a lot. That's what I'm thinking about, is like those kinds of jobs that, you know, because like you said, at some point your body says, hey, maybe I don't want to be doing this every day, right? But for these guys, it's still great because they're nice and young. But I get that. But then you can sort of lead that into. And so the program design allows for that.
Oh, absolutely. And well, and we have students who've gone on to law school and students who've done different types of graduate school.
Oh, they could do like environmental law or something.
Absolutely, yes.
Oh,
so,
okay.
And we have... I was just thinking of Matt Berry, who did an environmental policy master's, and or Trevor Lehman, who was in the Coast Guard here in Juneau and finished our program and then got a master's also in environmental policy, but then is now running a research station in the Arctic. So people do lots of different things coming out of our program.
I'm just talking to the parents out there, you know, like if you're seeing your kid who's really into skiing or in the outdoors or something, and you know, it's like they can combine their education with that love, right? And it can become something that it can be a lifelong pursuit and a career, which is just really kind of cool. Well, this has been fantastic to learn about the Outdoor Studies program. Where is the best place to find more? Is it to go to the UAS website, or do you guys have like, does the program have its own like Facebook page or anything?
Probably the UAS website. We have had a number of people try to make a Facebook page, for but you know, then students graduate.
Right?
And
yeah.
I mean, the other thing that
Kiana, get on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Not
exactly.
My thing.
but people can also, I mean, so if they go to the UAS website, they'll also find my email and contact information, and Kevin Meyer's email and contact information, and so. People should also feel free just to contact
us. Just reach out, right? Yeah. Reach out and say, hey, would this be something for me?
But then on the website, on the UAS website, if anybody puts in Outdoor Studies, University of Alaska Southeast, it'll take you to the program webpage, and that'll give degree options and a lot of information and fun videos to watch. And
yeah, I saw some of those videos. So, those are really cool to get you sort of inspired to do that. Kevin Krein, Kevin Meyer, Kiana Potter, Brian Bolaños, thank you so much, Gunnath Cheesh, for coming in and sharing us a little bit about the Outdoor Studies program.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, happy spring, almost, hopefully, right?
We need a little more winter.
Yeah, this is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We'll do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Yaith Yatsin, a.k.a. Nicholas Galanin's band Yatsin, just released a new album. And Nicholas is part of an art show opening this weekend. He'll be here to chat, and we'll listen to some tunes. Plus, Theater Alaska is premiering a new play by Mary Ellefson called These Birds. We'll have a preview. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, Out the Road, which is where UAS is. Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunnath Cheesh. Have a lovely Juno evening.